And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is GCaptain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of GCaptain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles, and in the studio with me is, well, shall I say it, a rather sickly looking John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you doing?
I am a bit under the weather. How are you doing?
That makes two of us. You don't look too bad because I look just as bad, if not worse. So listeners, we apologize for the nasality of this broadcast. If you hear a little nasalness in the broadcast here, it's not the equipment, it's not the studio, it is actually John and I. We both came down with our colds. Mine has turned into a sinus thing, and John has real glassy eyes, so he's on either high on cold medicine or still sick. So,
yes, and I totally missed work yesterday, so this broadcast comes, I usually research the night before, check my facts. Today I'm just going to make it up.
You're winging it today.
I'm winging it. So if I say a ship is 300 feet, it might be 100, it might be 600. I'm just going to guess at some figures.
Okay, well, very good. Well, this is going to be interesting. So I'm going to ask listeners, we're going to put John to the, hold his fire to the feet, his feet to the fire today. We're going to ask him some extra questions. I think we're both high on cold medicine this morning. This broadcast is for the week of December 9th, 2013. This is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. We have several interesting things to talk about today. We're going to touch on the, I believe it's the largest floating man-made thing in the world, and it's called the Prelude.
Obviously, you're not. Haven't done your research either.
No, and I even wrote on my little notes here the Prey Duel.
Thingamajig.
So, yeah, it's a large thing in the water, and we're going to talk about that. There is a video that has surfaced of a survivor from a sunken tug, and we'll talk about that. We actually spoke about that, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago, or quite a while ago, and this video has surfaced. And if we have time, we're going to touch on a container ship, the Cosco, which the pilot had to experience an unfortunate turn of events in that situation. So we'll get there if we do have the time. So John, we are both sick, so we'll struggle through this as best we can. But last night, you were actually on the radio, I understand, as well. So what was going on there?
Yes, the BBC invited me on, sniffles and coughs and all.
The BBC, the British BBC. Is that the British Broadcasting Corporation?
Yes.
Did they all have accents?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
They did.
And so were you talking to them over the pond, or how did that go?
It's strange. When I'm on NPR, they ask me, I got to drive up to San Francisco and go to their studios, and you're sitting in the studio, and they got the super sensitive mics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an engineer staring at a big glass window with all electronics and dials, and he's pushing it. And every time you move a little bit, you know, you can hear the crinkling sound of
so you mean
clothes
their
on
studio,
the super sensitive mics.
So their studio is fancier than our studio that we have right here?
Much fancier.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a high-class studio then.
And then I've done a bunch with the CBC, which is Canadian Broadcasting Service, and they said, okay, just find somewhere real quiet at home, and we need a landline.
Right.
You know, a good telephone and a landline. And BBC, which is the, you know, most respected world, you know, we've all heard, this is the BBC World
right.
Service. You think they'd have the highest standards, but they say, oh, just Skype. Skype's good with us.
Nice.
And you'd be surprised to hear where they ask you to do the interview from. Inside your car.
Oh, really?
They wanted me to sit inside my car. I was a little worried the cops would pull in.
I was
going to
say,
this guy doing?
Yeah, the neighbors, you may have good acoustics in your car. Your neighbors may be a bit mystified and curious as to what you're doing out there.
Yeah, so I had to get out and, at night at 8:30 in the evening, go sit in my driveway and talk to the BBC.
So I guess it makes sense. Good acoustics, because
sure.
You've got a lot of cloth that probably... Maybe we should start doing this. One of the problems, listeners, that we have in our studio, and I think we've hit on this before, there is a little bit of echo. We even had a listener email us once about the echo that we have in our broadcast. Part of the reason why is we are sitting here with the view of the Pacific, and my place has quite a bit of hardwood flooring and high ceilings and a lot of hard surfaces. So that's why we're joking around about our luxury studio here. But we do have a view of the Pacific, so that is nice. But John, maybe we should. You want to go sit out in the car and finish this recording off?
No, that would be a little too weird.
That would be strange. I love you, buddy, but there are limits. Okay, so and how did what were
I'm
you talking?
I'm okay being in the car by myself.
Okay, that's right. Oh, boy. I'm not even going to go there. So what were you talking about on the BBC last night?
The Shell Prelude, which is an FLNG vessel. It's a floating production unit that's going to be used to process natural gas. So it's going to Western Australia, where it's going to spend the next 25 years connected. You know, they've already drilled into this massive natural gas reserve that's offshore. And this unit is going to suck that gas up into it, process it, convert it into liquid, cryogenically freeze the gas liquid, and then shuttle tankers, so LNG tankers, are going to come alongside it, and they're going to transfer the liquid natural gas into the LNG tankers, which will deliver it to Australia.
Interesting. So I do have a few questions for you about this. So I looked at the picture on G Captain, and I saw it said FLNG Prelude, which by that FLNG, I assumed it was natural gas, but then I didn't see the domes on it, so I thought, well, maybe it's not natural gas. Now, from what you're telling me, then this sounds more like the Prelude is almost like a floating processing plant, and then offloads to the LNG tankers that have the more traditional look with the domes on them.
Yes, there are going to be domes because there has to be enough storage capacity to fill the tanker. But these are relatively small tankers. The shuttle tankers are just going to shuttle between the Prelude unit into Australia. So they're just going to shuttle back and forth. There'll be a couple of these shuttle tankers that'll bring it back and forth. So it doesn't need large capacity, but there is storage capacity in this as well as the production facilities to actually process and pull out this LNG gas. But this is a huge, huge vessel, the largest floating object ever built. This is 50% larger than our biggest, longer, 50% longer than our biggest aircraft carrier.
Wow.
So you take a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier, add another 50% to the bow, and that's how large this vessel is.
I'll profess to some of my ignorance here, but the aircraft carriers, I'm going to just take a stab in the dark. What are they, about 800, 900, or 1,000 feet? Somewhere around
1,200,
there?
1,200, I
believe. So if this is 50% more than that, we're looking at about a 1,500-foot ship.
Yeah, it's even bigger. It's like 17 or 18. It's 380 meters. So I haven't done the conversion yet, but massive vessel.
Yeah, I see John tapping his keys there. Are you hitting the Google conversion?
Google says 9,800 feet. That's wrong.
That is a super big ship. Well, and it stands to reason since it's the largest vessel, the largest floating vessel. And we keep calling it a vessel as opposed to a ship. I mean, is this thing a ship? Does it sail around, or is it designed to sit in that one place, or is it designed to actually be seafaring, seagoing?
No, it is going to be towed down to Australia. It's going to have some propulsion units in order to position itself into the wind, but it's never going to be, you know, commanded on a voyage. It's going to stay in one spot for the majority of its life and be towed when it has to be moved.
So it's not really designed to be underway and to...
No, and it's designed... It's what it really is a large barge. So it's going to be towed whenever it has to be transported. And if you look at the hull shape, it's very blunt nose, very flat bottom. So it's not built for speed at all. It's built for stability so that it'll stay in one location with as little movement as possible during the you know, winds and bad weather or whatever may come to it.
Gotcha. Okay. So it is a floating vessel. We hesitate to call it a floating ship, and hopefully most ships float. So, but it is this large vessel. And then, as you mentioned, it'll offload to the LNG ships, and they'll transport the LNG wherever it needs to go.
Correct.
So, you know, this brings up another thought, just out of the blue here. You know how airplanes, jet fighters, will refuel in the air from those large tankers?
Yep.
Have you heard of this in the shipping industry? I'm just thinking as we've reported on, and as G Captain has reported on, some ships are converting over to LNG as a cleaner and arguably more efficient fuel. Have you ever heard of ships being refueled underway?
Yes, the Navy does it continually.
I suppose when I think about it, I knew that. When I think about it, the Navy does. But I'm wondering why more commercial ships don't do this.
Now, this is going to be one of my harebrained guesses.
Okay.
But I remember somewhere in my past history that the aircraft carriers have, have fuel tanks that are more fuel carrying capacity than most of the Navy tankers, which sounds normal at first until you realize that they're nuclear powered. Why would they don't need any fuel.
Right.
Why do they have these enormous fuel tanks? And it's because the aircraft consume a significant amount of fuel. So that's they have large capacities, but the Military Sealift Command, which is the civilian arm of the U.S. Navy, it's run by many of our listeners are on MSC ships right now. They do underway replenishment and pull up alongside the tanker, and they actually have a whole system, which the mnemonic to remember it is go rub your balls in grease. the flags are green, red, blue, depending on how long this is.
But, right.
Yes, so that's something that's practiced every day somewhere around the world in the Navy by MSC ships.
So, well, here's the line of thinking that I was on. When we have spoken about LNG before and on some of the reading that I've done, and I've got a buddy actually in the industry too, one of the challenges that they cite is sort of a catch-22. The infrastructure, the facilities aren't there yet in order to fuel up ships. In other words, you know, there are only a limited number of ports in the world that a ship can go into and get fueled up in terms of LNG. And thus, it's slow to adopt that technology. But with what we're talking about with this offloading from this large manufacturing boat, the Prelude, onto these transport boats, I'm just wondering, or ships, I'm just wondering why it's not talked about more that LNG just can be done on the fly. Well, and I guess that would be challenging too. I'm just thinking out loud with
significant here. Problem. It's the cost. But you're a finance guy, expertise in large numbers. How much do you think a vessel that's 50% bigger, and this is a complex vessel, one, because it's got, you know, if you look at any processing rig, FPSO, floating production storage and offloading thing, it looks like a spaghetti bowl on deck of valves and different ways to process all this oil. So this is basically a refinery, floating refinery at sea that's 50% larger than our biggest. What number would you guess at the top of your head, the cost of building something like this?
Oh my gosh. I'm sure into the probably, I mean, just a wild stab in the dark. Oh, maybe $3 billion, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Shell is not discussing how much it cost. A year ago, the estimate was $5
billion. Okay, that wasn't too far off. Now, only $2 billion off.
Now Reuters is talking to an expert that says that this is costing $9
billion. Wow, with the B.
Dollars. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in that range, it's a widespread, but these are very expensive vessels, and Shell has plans to build up to 10 of them, and this is not the largest one they're going to build.
Wow. So this also says something about LNG, that it looks like it's here to stay, because we've had a lot of controversy in the United States here as far as converting over to LNG. We know that we have huge reserves in the United States. Is this a stepping stone fuel to get us off completely of petroleum-based fuels? But if the oil companies are making this type of investment into LNG, then that seems to be a trend that's going to be around for a while.
And this $5 to $10 billion investment in this is just a small portion of the overall costs. You know, they still have to build the shuttle tankers, they have to build the facilities on shore to offload this, the pipelines to wherever it's going. This is a small cost of the project of just that one single well. So you got to imagine how much natural gas is in this one location in Western Australia and how much that gas underneath the earth is worth. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they say that one of the biggest natural gas reserves in the world is right out your window right there.
Right, off the coast of California.
Off the coast of California. So that was one proposal that Schwarzenegger actually came. We have a lot of older rigs off Santa Barbara that were grandfathered in. And then they did the drilling moratorium after the terrible Santa Barbara oil spill. And no new rigs have been in. Well, Schwarzenegger said, let's talk to the oil companies, get rid of all these old rigs and just bring in 5 or 6 natural gas drilling drill ships that will just drill for natural gas so that if there is a deepwater horizon type blowout, yes, there will be some oil in the water, but the majority of the discharge will be natural gas and won't hurt the pristine beaches. Also, it'll be 100 miles offshore, so you won't be able to see it. You won't be able to, and it could bring great amount of income to communities like Morro Bay, which would have to supply the supply boats and so forth. But, you know, everything in this country seems to be black and white. Democrat versus Republican, yeah. All drilling or no drilling. So a lot of these plans, you know, they said just 5 drill ships off the coast of California could, and I read about this 2 years ago at the height of our financial crisis in the state. They said that could totally eliminate all of California's debt right there.
Wow.
So yes, it's massive amounts of money that we're talking about that Shell's investing, which means that the pocket of natural gas in Western Australia, off the coast of Broome, Australia, is going to bring in profits that are how many times that?
Right. Wow. So yeah, and if we did that off the coast right here in California, you'd have a job as a skipper right here in town as a supply boat captain.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad.
Maybe we're going to pack our bags and move down to Australia, help those guys out. Well, very good. We did, I'll look up his name on the email here when we take a break in a moment, but we had a listener email us. I hate to bring this up. The G-Captain site was down for a very short period of time, but a listener emailed me, and he actually brought up some contacts and some questions about the transportation industry. He was a listener who found it very interesting, and I find this interesting as well. So I'll throw this out to the listeners. If there is anyone listening that is in particularly the LNG industry or fuel industry, and you have some thoughts on where particularly the maritime and shipping industry is going with regard to how we want to fuel our vessels in the future, shoot me an email. You can click the link on gcaptain.com. It's jeff@ecclswealth.com, jeff@ecclswealth.com. Again, you can get that link on G-Captain. And shoot me an email, and maybe we can get a quick interview with you here on one of these shows, or certainly bring up some of the points that you would like to share with other listeners. So we're going to take a quick break right now because we got to blow our nose. We want to thank our sponsor of the show, Six Maritime, and we'll listen to a message from them right now. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced, Six Maritime. To learn more, visit
visit sixmaritime.com.
Welcome back to G Captain Radio, listeners. Thanks for sticking with us. You're here with John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles. So I did want to give a shout out to one of our loyal readers and listeners. That is Les Smith out in Rapid City, South Dakota. Les was kind enough to email me and give me some information on the transportation industry and also gave us the heads up. We already knew the folks, the good folks at G-Captain were working furiously at getting the website back up. But Les, when he wrote me, told me that every single morning when he wakes up, the first thing he does is check G-Captain. So we appreciate loyal readers like that as well as our loyal listeners. Speaking of which, listeners, we want G-Captain Radio to continue to grow in order for it to be economically viable to stay on the G-Captain website. So we do have a sponsor, Six Maritime. We're grateful for that. But we do need to see our listenership increase. So the way that you can help us with that is by simply forwarding the link to your friends in your email address list. So please do that. Anyone that you think would have an interest in listening to the great things that John and I talk about every week, please forward that link and have them listen. And that way you will be ensured that G-Captain will be around as the weeks ensue.
It's one of the problems is getting so large. 5 years ago, I could just say, oh, we do this project or that project or do a project for passion. Now we got partners and board of director and employees and have to justify every new thing we do. So
it's all got to make economic sense at the end of the day. See, that's why I'm an economist, John, and a finance guy. It always comes back to the bottom line at the end of the day.
It does. And the bottom line was that I was incorrect on the length.
Uh-oh.
1,600 feet is the length of the Prelude.
1,600 feet.
Wow. Compared to almost 1,100 feet for the Nimitz-class carrier.
That is a large,
so think of an aircraft carrier, and I was right about the 50%. Think of it being 50% larger.
Huge.
Huge.
A big, it's like an island out there. All right. Well, very good. So anything else with regard to the Prelude before I move on, John?
No, and part of the cost is because this LNG is so explosive and potentially dangerous, this could turn into a mini atom bomb if it went up. So a lot of the cost here is really good quality components, so engineering, but you know, you get onto a normal tanker and the valves are made out of steel, painted. A lot of this stuff here is high-grade stainless steel, titanium, good quality stuff. So this is it's being built at Samsung, which does good work. And this is not only a large ship, but from everything I've learned, a really well-built that's got a lot of good technology, good equipment inside of it.
Is Samsung, again, the listeners, you get to laugh along with me with my ignorance here on some of these things. I am a finance guy. I was only a merchant seaman for 2 years, but once a merchant seaman, always a merchant marine. Is Samsung in Japan?
Korea.
Korea, okay. Well, that's close.
Yes.
All right.
The third largest shipyard in the world. The first is Hyundai. The second is DSME. With the Hyundai produces the most ships, over one per week they're launching. DSME is where the Tripoli, the Maersk, the largest container ship, was built, and Samsung, and they're all in the southeast corner of South Korea, these three mega shipyards.
So South Korea has really put itself on the map as the shipbuilder for this century, huh?
They are the premier. The Chinese are nipping at their heels. But Samsung's, I mean, Korea's the technology innovator. So a lot of the, you know, $50 million ships, up to $100 million ships are being built in China now, being outsourced everywhere. But when you when you need a ship that's over $100 million because it's complicated or has dynamic positioning equipment and all this other stuff, it's going to, you know, it's going to be built in Korea because that's where they have the expertise. With the exception of the cruise industry, the shipyard Samsung built has plans for cruise ships. They've been trying to get in the cruise ship industry. For years now, they built a cruise ship and it was a huge failure. The aesthetic of the Korean, you know, the Koreans are very efficient. But they're not particularly good or haven't been able to break in through, you know, getting that feel of a cruise ship, of the majesty and the beauty and the, so most of the cruise ships are built in Europe.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the United States, where does the U.S. stand in there? And where do we, in particular, get our military vessels fabricated?
We're way behind. All military vessels and most Jones Act vessels have to be built in U.S. yards. Newport News is builds the aircraft carriers, the largest. There's also Bath Iron Works in Maine, which is huge. Shipyards in Pascagoula, San Diego. And all of our Navy ships are built in the U.S., but very few commercial ships. It's someone, Marine Money, Jim Lawrence, the editor of that, was telling me he went to Hyundai in South Korea and said there were more ships currently under construction there right now. So as he looked out of the yard, all the ships laying there. There were more there at that moment under construction than we have built in the United States since the Nixon administration.
Oh my gosh. That is a sad, sad statistic, isn't it?
Yes.
I would assume, being the economist in the room, that one of the primary factors of that is cost of labor, as well as regulations in terms of building.
You're incorrect.
Really?
Okay. The labor costs are actually very slightly, they're almost on par, but very slightly higher in South Korea. So they make
labor costs are higher in South Korea,
correct,
than here in
very
the U.S.?
Very slightly higher.
Really?
They have very good unions. They're very organized.
I would have lost a bet on that one, John.
Yes. And you're right, the regulations are a little easier. They're just as strict, but the shipyards, they bring in such a large revenue for the country, they have more political power to sway regulations.
Right.
But it's still a very regulated country, a first world country. It's hard.
Well, I'm excited.
A lot of bureaucracy. But what
I'm excited to hear your explanation here, because why in the heck then aren't we competing in this industry?
Well, I was at a shipyard in the southeast. I won't name which particular one. 10 years ago. And
Southeast United States.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And there was a rain cloud in the horizon, and each of the welders grabbed a piece of chalk and drew a circle on the deck. So that's very strange. Why are they driving the circle? You watch. So the rain cloud came, and it was a very minor crowd, and these guys, welders, started screaming at numbers. 1, 2, 1, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4. And someone goes, 6. I got 6. So it was in their union rules, if 6 raindrops land within a circle,
my gosh,
radius 1 foot, they can't work the rest of the day. It's unsafe. So they all go, one guy got 6 raindrops in a circle and left. In Korea, they work 8-hour days. They have off weekends. They have, I think, more than 2 weeks vacation a year. But when they're working, they're working. You won't find... they have break times and lunch hours and break times. You'll see them doing cigarettes and hanging out. But during work time, I would challenge you to find, you know, I would bet you $1,000 you couldn't take a picture of a guy given one day in a Korean shipyard during work time that wasn't hard at it.
So I'm sorry, I kind of broke into you when you were talking about it because I was getting so excited about it. So did you... also, though, mentioned that the difference is being efficiency, the fact that the Koreans, South Korea, is more competitive than we are in the shipbuilding industry?
That's it. It's so efficiency. They're working not only in labor, where they're actually making the most of their hours, but it's very organized by spreadsheets and processes, and you know, everyone's hours and the production is all put down on a spreadsheet, and if one thing isn't performing up to you know, the certain level of efficiency, they have a whole team of efficiency experts that go and, you know, solve the problem and find more ways to make it more efficient. Plus, as you build this stuff, you start purchasing the equipment and they're gaining the expertise. We have lost that expertise in the United States. We don't have a shipyard that has the laser cutters and the cranes and the things needed to build these ships. So even if we wanted to build one of this class, it would be almost impossible to do so.
You know, this is interesting. We're veering off here, but it's an interesting conversation. Just in talking about such large things like this, where we've lost the edge, and as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking in my mind, well, we're still the most arguably the most innovative and efficient workforce and country economic engine in the world. But here's an interesting observation. We've sort of downsized or downscaled. And I'll give you an example. We hear a lot about 3D printing these days, which are these machines that can fabricate things. Basically, you've got a small tool shop locally for anyone if you want to create something. Correct. So entrepreneurs, and we have Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo right here, is a local university that has quite a strong entrepreneurial program. They're able to go out and manufacture and start a company, an innovative entrepreneurial company on a small basis, and really be on that cutting edge. So on a small scale, it seems that we still have that. But when we look at a large scale, something like building jetliners or ships, we seem to have lost it. That's my random thought of the day. I mean, what's your observation on that?
You're right. Cal Poly is amazing. I co-wrote for Forbes magazine, one of the first articles. This was 2 years ago on 3D printing technology that really took off. I'm an investor in Strength Portal, a little company out of Cal Poly. And you're absolutely right. And the innovation in the offshore industry is really in Houston too. I forget which company it was. It might have been Chevron or ExxonMobil. Just built the largest, most powerful supercomputer in the world in Houston, Texas. And this was to dissect the seismic. So they diagram. So before they start drilling a well, they have to know that there's oil down there before they invest the billions of dollars needed. So they tow a sonar array behind a ship, and this bounces sonar stuff, and they start getting these sonar images and radar images from the sea bottom thousands of feet down. And it's an immense amount of data. It's the most data hungry process that's ever done. Mm-hmm. And so we just built the largest supercomputer center in Houston, and a lot of these companies are headquarters, a lot of the service companies are headquarters. So a lot of the expertise on, there was a lot of Americans at work on this particular Shell project, and every oil, the cryogenically, the freezing, was actually in Santa Maria. That was the first real company that put together this, you know, the refrigeration to actually freeze on the first LNG ships was Santa Maria, which for our listeners is just a half an hour drive from GCAM headquarters. And I hear that they still do a lot of the, so it's very likely that their product that wasn't made in the US but was designed here is on this Shell Prelude class. And there are thousands of other companies in the U.S. that contributed to this project.
Interesting.
But no, we cannot build them here.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Well, we could talk for hours about that and do studies on it. But we're already out of time, John.
Out of time.
So we've had a good conversation today. It took a life of its own. Now, I noticed you've got some paint on your hands there. Is that primer or what have you been up to? Is the wife putting you to work?
Sprucing up the SVG Chem, the sailing vessel, or my office / the light parade is this Saturday.
Yep, the lighted boat parade that we have here in Morro Bay, an annual tradition. Are you gonna
string lights up on the boat?
Are you gonna do it?
And yes, so I just, there were a couple areas that need a little painting and sanding. And
okay, good for you. Well, that's good. That's good to see you getting out there, getting the hands dirty still.
I have a lot of experience in painting, so many years at the academy, whenever you got in trouble, you would have to spend your afternoon chipping paint and painting. So I can say I have many hours of experience painting vessels.
I actually enjoyed it when I was a merchant seaman for the 2 years that I did it out of college. This was many moons ago, back in 87 and 88. Chipping and scraping. There was a lot of chipping and scraping, and then painting. And I remember being on my hands and knees with the knee guards, the knee cushions, and using the needle gun and poking away with that needle gun, getting all the paint off the deck, and then having to put that special solution on it,
before the primer even, that stuff that
OSFO?
Yeah, I think it's been so long.
The rust converter.
Yes, yeah, it was the rust stuff.
It turned it black.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. Put that on the spots where there was rust, and that was good work.
Yeah.
I'm a financial guy now, and I often refer back. I say those were the only 2 years of honest work I've done in my life. Because now I just hit keys on a computer, talk to nice guys like you and our listeners, and move money around on a computer.
Well, if you ever want to do some sanding and priming, I'd be more than happy to find some work for you.
You know that I went on a partnership on a Catalina 30 sailboat. I'm more of a power guy, but I've been trying to get more and more into the sail thing over the last couple of years. And we decided not to do the lighted boat parade this year because we just got the boat a couple months ago and we're still getting largely familiar with it. And it's a little underpowered as far as the diesel in it. It's got a Yanmar one cylinder. Yeah, it's a one banger.
Nice.
So I'm not sure that that we want to get out there yet. We've got some pretty, for listeners to inform you, we've got some pretty strong currents here within the estuary. We're in Morro Bay estuary, and so there's one inlet to a fairly good size estuary. So we get the tide ripping through here pretty good at probably three, maybe even four knots.
Absolutely. It's up to five.
Have you? Yeah. So it gets ripping through here. So that with a bunch of other, pardon the expression, but yahoos out there and the dark. And I don't know. We're going to take a pass this year. I'll look at you, though. I'll wave at you. I'll be over at the yacht club. I'll wave at you as you go by.
I will wave back.
Okay, good deal. And I don't know if I'll go over and do any sanding and priming, but I may go over and supervise.
We have enough supervisors. Thank you.
Okay, John. Well, closing thoughts for this week's show before we sign off.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. We've had a job board for a couple of years now in GCAM, but we got a full-time guy, Mike McDonald's, doing an excellent job on the job board. It's all he's doing every day is finding people jobs and posting new jobs on the job board. So I know a lot of you have looked at the job board in the past and said, there's some jobs here, but maybe not something that you're interested in or your type. But now we got a full-time guy. So his email is mikemcdonald@gcaptain.com. And he's recruited tons of companies who are posting new jobs on the job board. And if there are any jobs we're missing, give Mike send him an email and please check it out again. There's a resume upload feature. If you upload your resume to the job board, it goes to Mike McDonald's inbox personally, and he can find some recruiters to find a job specifically for you. So
very
good stuff.
Good. That sounds like a great evolution. So listeners, do that. Again, thank you, Six Maritime, for being a sponsor of the show. Feel free to email me here at the show as well, jeff@eccleswealth.com. You can find the link on gcaptain.com. Give us any feedback that you like, any suggestions for future shows. We'll even take some constructive criticism, won't we, John?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll even take that. And I'm hoping that you feel better soon.
You as well.
And me as well. So we'll maybe not be so nasally next week. Listeners, thank you again for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. GCaptain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.